We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself, because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you, because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Welcome in to the RotoWire NFL podcast. John McKechnie and Mario Puig back in the saddle, kicking off the off-season portion of our NFL content, keeping the feed alive during the off-season here. Obviously, the Super Bowl in the books. Now we are turning attention to the NFL draft, and specifically, we are going to be talking about receivers today because this upcoming class of receivers is as deep and as talented as we've seen in a long time. And I mean, last year's was great, and this one probably even tops it. But before we get into it, Mario, what's going on, man?
Nothing really. I mean, you say you're in the saddle. I'm more like caught by my ankle over the side of the horse. The horse is still running, and I'm just hanging, dangling by my
Jim Nebraska
short, stubby legs, helpless. But you know, still posting through it all the same.
Gotta post. Keep posting. So we are going to kind of start from the top and work our way down as far as the receivers go. Kind of give a snapshot of each of these top receiver prospects, give a breakdown, discuss that a little bit here. So I guess leading things off, I think we're both in agreement on who headlines this class. And it is splitting hairs between number one and number two. Some people have it 1A, 1B type of thing. But CeeDee Lamb of Oklahoma, let's start there.
Yeah, so this stuff is negotiable pending what kind of workout numbers we get from all these players. And so all we have right now to work on is production, confirmed traits like, you know, production, height, reported height weights, reported workout numbers. Sometimes Bruce Feldman gives us a bit of a scoop on that stuff even before the combine. But there's a lot of missing, you know, there's a lot of gaps in between. And I don't know if there are any 40 numbers out there, especially like reliable 40 numbers for guys like CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy. So I'm not trying to guess their speed so much or their, you know, verticals or whatever. And I'm more so looking at like kind of production they showed, how their production compares to the baseline set by the rest of the offense that they play in, mm-hmm. and then weighing that production against their age, basically, or the reported ages as best as we can find them at this point. That's not all reported either. So we're kind of going through the fog yet, as much as we're, you know, giving these rankings that have clear numbers that are, you know, higher than the next. There's still quite a bit of noise in the air. It's not all signal at this point, but at receiver, again, not to dispute the 1A, 1B thing, but I went with CeeDee Lamb as number one over Jerry Jeudy, kind of reluctantly, because they're both in the same tier for me. They're both in the second tier. I have Jonathan Taylor in the first tier, and then the second tier is when everybody else gets in, and I have CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy in the same one, the only receivers in the second tier. So, but part of it for me, the reason I guess that I kind of tie break toward CeeDee Lamb is because he's got the bigger frame by a trivial amount. Like, he's listed at 6'2", Jerry Jeudy's listed at 6'1". Wouldn't be surprising if they officially measure in at 6'1 and 6 foot between the two of them. And CeeDee Lamb, I think, just kind of has a very complete sort of skill set. Like, I don't know if he's as fast as Jerry Jeudy. Like, Jerry Jeudy might be better on the fly routes than CeeDee Lamb. But especially if we're trying to kind of idealize and identify a wide receiver one prototype, I think Lamb is really close to it. He's with that 6'2" frame. He's a little bit skinny right now, but you can easily imagine him hitting 200 or even maybe more than that in a little bit of time.
And he's already like started to add on, like, from the time he looks different now than he did as a freshman at Oklahoma, for instance. And he was killer as a freshman at Oklahoma, well over 10 yards a target during Baker Mayfield's Heisman season. So there's reason to believe that he can continue to add on to that frame. And he does work almost exclusively outside, I think, and just absolutely crush it. I mean, this year going for 1,327 yards and 14 touchdowns on just 94 targets. So he continued to improve year over year at Oklahoma with three different quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Jeudy, and this isn't like I'm not concerned about Jeudy by any means, but it's a little bit interesting to me, his drop off in production efficiency and the other teammates around him kind of catching up to him this year, where like I feel like the discourse this time a year ago going into the 2019 season was Jerry Jeudy, class of his own.
Yeah, and it's still possible he ends up there, depending on what happens with the combine, I guess. But and I do expect Jerry Jeudy to have some kind of standout testing, because he's one of those guys, when you turn on the tape, even though you can tell he's not as fast as teammate Henry Ruggs,
nobody is.
Jeudy seems to have kind of like the fastest feet. And there's a chance that this is kind of just like a useless distraction, like a novel distraction. Like, maybe he's moving his feet around to no particular useful outcome, but the production says that it actually is helpful. And, you know, maybe even if he's kind of wasting motion with some of his foot movement, maybe he'll tighten it up in the NFL and it won't go to waste, and he'll just have all that explosiveness going toward his routes and productive ways. So Jeudy, when you turn on the tape, it's like his feet are just a blur. He's very fast, very quick, but it's just there's something about that like short area start stop change of direction where he seems to stand out even more than Ruggs, who is just, you know, insanely fast. He's also very quick and explosive, but the speed is like so jarring. And yet, if you were kind of imagining those two running a three-cone drill, it wouldn't be surprising to me if Jeudy had the better time in it. So it wouldn't shock me if he has something insane, like a 6.5 second three-cone drill or something like that. And in that case, Jerry Jeudy might not have that 4.2 or 4.3 or whatever that Ruggs did, but I think because Jeudy always outproduced him volume-wise at Alabama, I kind of just have to give him the benefit of the doubt over Ruggs. And that's not me like being low on Ruggs. I'm also high on him, and we'll get to him in a second. But for me, with Lamb, it's just that, like you said, John, he improved every year. And in the last 2 years, or his 3 years of Oklahoma production, more or less matches the production of Marquise Brown, who arrived as a junior college guy, mm-hmm. and did not have to play with Jalen Hurts that 1 year. And I know Jalen Hurts put up big numbers, but I don't think he's a naturally accurate quarterback. And I can imagine, if it had been third year CeeDee Lamb playing with Baker Mayfield or Kyler Murray, I can imagine his numbers being even better in the same setting than what Marquise Brown has done. But Marquise Brown has shown that, you know, Marquise Brown, like CeeDee Lamb, they both put up big volume at Oklahoma, but they also both outproduced the baseline efficiency of their offenses. So it's like Marquise Brown has shown, more or less, in my opinion anyway, that he was not a product of the Oklahoma system.
Yeah.
And CeeDee Lamb producing the same way, maybe better in age adjustment terms, gives me the same, you know, confidence. Like, I am not worried about this being a system player. I think he's a star NFL player.
So I know earlier on in the process, when you're starting to dive into all this, obviously you're more busy with NFL stuff during the NFL season. Is there still the Brandon Lloyd, except a little, like, on steroids type of comp for CeeDee Lamb for you?
Yeah, and the faster, bigger Brandon Lloyd thing was the Brandon Lloyd comparison in itself was not even meant to be a criticism or whatever, because Brandon Lloyd dominated at Illinois and he had like one 1400 yard season in the NFL. He did that being a guy who was skinny and ran like a 4.6 though. I think CeeDee Lamb will be less skinny, you know, pushing 200 pounds or so, will still be faster than Brandon Lloyd, and he also had better college production. But I do imagine a similar sort of player, like that kind of, you look at him and he's more lanky than he is stocky, and he's very acrobatic, and just like a kind of, he's got the kind of athleticism that you can imagine him doing, reverse layups, 360s, that kind of athleticism. Like, of course he's fast and of course he can play football tasks, but he also seems to have that innate sort of just acrobatic ability that few people do, and almost no one as big and fast and productive as him does. So I just see a lot of ways in a conventional offense that you can get CeeDee Lamb involved in a high volume role, high efficiency role. And Not to say like I don't with Jerry Jeudy, it's just I feel like there's a little bit more evidence in the case of Lamb, and I'm totally prepared to abandon this opinion though if Lamb runs like a 4.54 at the combine and Jeudy weighs the same amount and runs like a 4.38 or something like that. Stuff like that can negotiate this for me.
For sure.
But yeah, in the meantime, I'm kind of going with Lamb a little bit ahead, just because I just see very few tasks that. There's basically like no task that I wouldn't grade CeeDee Lamb a plus grade for. Whereas with Jeudy, if only for his frame, it's kind of hard. It feels unfair to expect him to be better than a Calvin Ridley type. And I know he was more productive than Calvin Ridley, and I am going to grade him.
He kind of reminds me of Calvin Ridley a little bit, but better.
Yeah. And I'll grade him higher, but it's like at the same time, it's like, can I really expect, unless he's got like 4.35 speed or something, it's just kind of hard to reason how Jerry Jeudy could be much better in the NFL than Calvin Ridley has been, because Calvin Ridley set a pretty high bar. So there's stuff to sort out yet. It's just like generally to go in the top 10 of a draft at receiver, you need to get that kind of like coveted wide receiver one kind of hype. And it's harder to do that with a guy who's 6'1", 190 like Jerry Jeudy is, unless he also has like top 97th percentile athleticism, which he could. It's just unconfirmed as of now.
Right, exactly. And I saw a funny mention on a tweet. Someone was tweeting out a cut up of Jerry Jeudy the other day, and somebody just flies in and says his knees look awful.
What does that
mean? I think you know who I'm talking about, but it was. Just like, and the person responded, just like, what are you talking about? But
Jerry Jeudy, show the feet, sweetie.
that's for his OnlyFans. All right, let's move on over to the second tier of receivers here. We're in agreement on who fits this bill, but I think our orders are a little bit different. But starting things out, Jalen Reagor of TCU.
Yeah, so you'll see varying opinions on all of these guys, even the last two, but also these guys coming up, because Reagor and Henry Ruggs and T. Higgins, those are the guys that I imagine being in this next tier. I'd also include Devin DuVernay, but I think I'm in the minority on that one, slash I'm open to arguments against that. But basically, these guys, the tier that they're in, they just fall short of that kind of easy all-pro projection that I think you get with CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy. And these guys, you still have a lot of hope for them being all-pro types of players. It's just that you don't feel quite as greedy about assuming they'll definitely do it. And that's because there's just some incomplete part of their profile. It's like, whereas Lamb and Jeudy, it's exceedingly difficult to criticize them for any reason. With Jalen Reagor, you at least have on tape, he's dropped some passes.
Yep.
You've got not great efficiency, like better than the baseline of the TCU offense, but Jalen Reagor, you're banking on the tools, you're projecting on the basis of the tools, and like his early career standing out at TCU, where he led the team as a true freshman in receiving yardage and receiving touchdowns. even though they had like a 4 or 5 receiver rotation in which everybody else who he still outproduced had a upperclassman advantage over him, the true freshman, and he still was better than these guys who are, you know, 2 or 3 years older than him. But he never had the volume. He never had the shrieking efficiency production that you get with Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb. But I think TCU's quarterbacks were so bad. And when I watched,
especially this year,
and when I watched the Rager tape, even of the ones where he's dropping passes, I think you have to remember the big picture here, which is like this guy is probably exhausted and he's probably losing focus because he's probably stressed about just, you know, knowing every single play that he's going to be expected to like bail out the offense, even though the quarterback will undermine him every single time. And that kind of stuff can just knock a player off his game a little bit, because he was super efficient starting out at TCU. Like, his efficiency got worse as it went on, his career went along. And when you turn on that tape, it's like he never gets to catch anything in stride. He's always having to do miraculous things just to make basic plays. And, you know, forget running after the catch opportunity. Forget, like, just dusting somebody and having a perfectly placed downfield pass to catch in stride. It just doesn't happen in his tape. So when I look at that, I try to imagine what'll happen if these passes were a little bit better. And I bet if the passes got better and if he didn't have to twist and like stop and start and, you know, panic in the middle of his routes constantly to adjust to these passes, I bet his focus would improve too. So in any case, Rager's 5'11", 195. Bruce Feldman reported that he's got sub 4.3 speed. He should murder the combine. And if he murders the combine to the kind of tune that we're expecting, it overrules any production concerns that I have. And I'm in that case more so imagining what it might have looked like in an offense that just didn't suck. It's not that different of a case to me than like Mecole Hardman last year, where I remember people were just, oh, he only had 500 yards and I saw him drop a pass. The pass sucked, but he should have caught it. You know, that kind of stuff. And it's like, well, imagine for once, for instance, imagine if this guy was, I don't know, in a decent offense. You know, what might happen then? And we saw what might happen then when Mecole Hardman got into the Chiefs offense. And that's the, you know, very best case scenario, quite literally the best case scenario. You can't expect that kind of situational improvement for a prospect. But if Jalen Rager went to, I don't know, the Packers or something, I think, I don't know, I would grade Rager higher as a prospect than I would have Davante Adams back in his draft. I think within like a year or two, he could be an all-pro sort of receiver if he's in an offense that just throws for 4,000 or more yards in a year. So that's at least if he tests the way Feldman recently reported. And when you turn on the tape with Rager, I think it makes sense that he is that athletic. It's not hard to see why he would be considered an elite prospect when you just turn on the tape.
There's a lot of times on his tape where you just see him immediately put a defender in the spin cycle right off the line, or, you know, the play develops and he's several, you know, 5-10 yards of separation away from the cornerbacks that are going against him. So it's very obvious the athleticism, both like in the short area and the long speed that he has. And like you said, the offense did him no favors as far as like a lot of the ball placement and that sort of thing. Like, one of his best routes against Oklahoma State this past year, he completely crushed the cornerback, still had to come back and jump and make a very acrobatic play to get it, but he still made that play. So, I mean, I think that he does that. While the consistency can be better, like you pointed out there, like the ceiling is something that's like worth betting on.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't say that Jalen Rager has like plus hands. It's just one of those, like, Mecole Hardman does not have plus hands. No. But when you're that fast and when you're that athletic and when you're that good at running after the catch and when you're that good at just winning the ball when it's in the air, it's like it all works itself out such that you get more opportunities and you do more with the opportunities that you don't drop, to the point that the drops don't even matter. And not to even assume they're going to keep happening, because again, I really think that if these passes had been more on target and if he had been able to get into a rhythm as a receiver where he can have basic expectations about the ball being in a certain place at a certain time, his mind would have had more just bandwidth to focus, you know. And it's like, when there's a million things you're worried about, yeah, you might play a little more distracted than the guy who's catching passes from Tua.
Sure.
So I think there's a non-zero chance that, I, in my opinion, that Rager is the best receiver in this draft. And in terms of size-adjusted athleticism, he's almost like my early favorite. But yeah, I have to assume his hands are worse than Lamb, Jeudy. I have to assume he's even a worse route runner than them. But I still have a lot, maybe too much confidence in Rager.
Yeah, there's a lot to like there. And, you know, dating back to, you know, his profile as a recruit, really high four-star type, like top-level receiver coming into TCU and, like you said, immediately dominated there as a true freshman. And
that was with, like, LSU, like John DeArcy or whatever. Like, it wasn't just scrubs that he outplayed. It was, like, guys who had age advantage over him and were supposed to be decent receivers, and he immediately made them obsolete.
Yeah, so impressive guy. Take a look if you haven't yet. But there, that Oklahoma State tape from this past year, I think, is his best game.
The West Virginia was probably the worst one.
Oh, okay, good to know.
If you want to see, like, his bad tape or whatever.
Yeah, that is good to, you know, balance it out, of course. Let's move on over to T. Higgins out of Clemson, kind of the first big receiver that comes to mind for this year's class.
Yeah, and Higgins is somebody who I am open to a range of outcomes with. Like, when I watched the tape, he played, at least last year, he played a lot in the slot, and he was super productive. He was super productive every year that he was at Clemson. But when you watch the tape, it's not obvious, at least it's not obvious to me, like how fast he might be or how quickly he can jump. Because frankly, a lot of it just looked very easy to him. It's like when you run in the slot, the college level, you're going to get a lot of like zone clean releases. It's harder to scheme against the slot receivers generally. And then here he is, you know, 6'3 at worst, 6'4 perhaps, listed at 6'4, 215. And he's going to be a standout athlete of some magnitude, but we don't know how much yet. The problem for me is, like, when I turn on the tape, I can't see him needing to cut loose ever. So I don't know what kind of gears he might have in store, because it was just so easy. He'd just go down the middle of the field, be taller, have more leaping ability than these guys trying to keep up with him, and he just always came through. So he was super, super efficient. At Clemson, I would say absolutely more efficient than the baseline. Like, I'm not really worried about Higgins just kind of riding the wave of the Clemson offense. I think the Clemson offense was largely so good because he was a part of it. The question is he a 4'6 kind of athlete at 6'4, 215, or is he maybe something? I don't want to put any, like, I have no particular expectation, and I certainly don't want to, like, feed any unfair ones. But if he would, for instance, run better than a 4'5, that's the kind of thing that takes him from the late first in my mind to the top 15, something like that. The bigger you are, the less pressure you have on performing well at the combine. But if you perform well at the combine and you're one of the biggest receivers in the draft and your production was awesome each of your 3 years at Clemson, it's kind of hard at that point to argue against him as a wide receiver one sort of prospect. It's like, what is there to criticize him about? So I don't know what to expect reasonably from his workout numbers, but I'm leaving open the possibility that he's not going to get the kind of athleticism grade that I'm taking the liberty of assuming in the case of Jalen Reagor, because we have the Feldman numbers with him. Henry Ruggs, it's just like, it's stupid how fast he looks on tape.
Yeah, right.
So I'm just not worried about him running a 4. If he runs like a 4.45 or something, I will probably just die. Like, I would be shocked if he
runs
Ruggs. Yeah. Like, I'm expecting, like, at worst a 4.38 or something like that.
I mean, the 4.45 would have to happen with like a weighted vest on or something.
Yeah. If there were like birds flying down to attack him in the middle of the 40, he might not break a 4.45. But if there are no birds, there's no bats, whatever it is, flying at him.
I don't think we have to worry about that. It's unless they keep the roof open.
Well, sometimes it's like you're in airports, you know, and there's birds flying around. Yeah, yeah. So I didn't know if that was a risk at the RCA Dome or wherever they have the combine.
The Lucas Oil.
The Lucas Oil, yeah.
The RCA Dome, and aside, worst stadium I ever went to.
Yes, yeah, so there are probably birds in there. Maybe they'll make their way into the new one. I don't know. but anyway, if they leave him alone, if they don't collide with him, if he doesn't Randy Johnson a bird while he's running the 40-yard dash.
That is what would happen.
Yeah, if he doesn't Randy Johnson, he still might break the 4.3 threshold, even if he's at three birds, I think it would take to keep him from running worse than a 4.4 flat. But in any case, that's just, like, I feel comfortable assuming that in Ruggs' case and Rager's case. With Higgins, I feel like there's a little bit more unknown, but I'm not worried. It's just the question is, how high can he reach?
So some of my notes on Higgins, like, yeah, the speed, the long speed that we'll have to get the numbers on at the combine, that will be a big factor there. I remember that was a huge factor when it came to Mike Williams, and he didn't run at the combine, so that kind of fueled some of the long speed speculation with him. But with Higgins, for being as big as he has like really impressive start-stop ability to me. Yeah. Like his routes are really, really crisp.
His
like
functional athleticism is not something that I worry about.
Yeah, so that looks really strong to me. I think he can get up, and obviously being as big as he is to begin with is going to make him a threat in the red zone or deep down the field, that type of thing. He's like a good hands catcher too. I know it's just optics, but like he's got really solid hands. I know that sometimes, and he got clobbered in that Ohio State game, so didn't play as well as we're used to seeing, but he had this hot streak. I want to pull this up real quick. A 5-game heater during like the mid to late part of this season. So basically from like the end of October up through the ACC championship game, 32 targets, 25 catches, 494 yards. That's 15.4 yards per target and 10 touchdowns in that span. That's when he was just like taking over college football. And that's when like Clemson had officially awakened from its like early season slumber. I think he like almost single-handedly brought him out of that.
Yeah. I'll put it this way. As much as I might be sounding kind of cautious about T. Higgins,
you do.
I never accepted the assumption that Justin Ross was better than him. And I, on some level, believe, like, I kind of believe Higgins is better as a prospect than Mike Williams was. And
that's fair.
I know that Mike Williams has been good in the NFL, and I know he was a 7th overall pick, but I'm just kind of skeptical that Mike Williams was worth more than like the 20th, 25th pick or something like that. We'll see how, I mean, he's got a lot of time in his career, and Keenan Allen steals a lot of opportunities from him. But in any case, I am totally open to the suggestion that T. Higgins is better than Justin Ross, who a lot of people were saying was the top overall dynasty prospect as of like 6 months ago or something.
You're just subtweeting me right now.
Oh, that was you? Yeah. Sorry. No, I mean, don't get me wrong. I had Ross at like 3. Yeah. So it's not as if I was, and I know I don't mean to be at all critical of Justin Ross. He could be awesome too, but it's just one of those.
He definitely didn't have a good year though.
For me though, it's one of those things like I am not particularly willing to believe that Ross is great and Higgins is not. Like I kind of am more likely to believe that they're kind of in the same boat, whatever boat it is.
Got it.
But yeah, I definitely don't mean to deny the possibility that Higgins can test really well at the combine. It's just like it was so easy for him at times at Clemson. There weren't many scenarios where he just had to let it rip, you know, like, and he'll do that at the combine, and that's when you find out how fast guys really are and how high they can really jump, because it's just not to say they're put in similar situations like that on the real field, but you know, that they don't end up in situations like that in the real field makes it hard to guess by the tape how fast they actually are. So if he ran like, again, if he runs like a 4.47 or something and he's 6'3", 220, that's the kind of thing that could put him in the conversation of wide receiver one, like the first one. Like if he weighs, you know, 25 pounds more than CeeDee Lamb and has the same 40 time, that's going to make me have to seriously reconsider things.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe this will help frame what, or give an idea of what the speed ends up looking like. His touchdown run against LSU in the national championship game, that's him in the open field. That's him also trucking over one of the LSU corners on his way to the end zone. So, I mean, that was an impressive run. So that kind of thing leads to me being optimistic that he runs a good 40 when you adjust for his size.
Yeah, I expect him to run and jump well for his size, certainly. It's just like I feel like with Judy and Lamb being the kind of quality prospects they are, or at least what I'm assuming they are, pending the workout metrics,
so he needs
it's a high bar.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's a ton of competition, like you said, at running back and receiver both in this draft, but I would say there's even more at receiver probably. But Higgins is one of those guys.
It's a bigger log jam.
He's not
too.
The favorite right now, but it would be foolish to rule out the chance of him being the best one.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on over to a receiver in a very, very different genre. We were just talking about him with the birds a few minutes ago there, but Henry Ruggs. Let's go.
Yeah, so I have no data. Like, I have no Feldman case as to why, you know, we would expect a 4.2 or whatever from Ruggs. It's just the tape that I'm basing it on. But when you turn on the tape and you watch him run, even if you put it up against tape of like John Ross or Mecole Hardman or Rager or whoever else, it's like
it's
Ruggs
different.
Looks a couple steps faster for some reason. That might be optical illusion in some sense because, you know, the faster your feet are moving on tape, the faster you look. So you can have some guys who are actually fast, faster than whoever the alternative is. But if they have longer strides, it might not look that way. And Ruggs is one of those guys. He's got fast feet. Maybe that's playing into it a little bit. But, man, he just... It reminds me of Ted Ginn at Ohio State when I watch some of these, specifically when he has the ball in the open field. And I think he's a much better prospect than Ted Ginn, who went, I think, ninth overall in his mm-hmm. draft. Probably should have gone something like 25th to 40th in his draft. With Ruggs, I am not one of these people who holds the market share numbers against him at Alabama. I do not penalize him even a little bit for having less volume than Devontae Smith and Jerry Jeudy, because it's kind of like the Terry McLaurin thing at Ohio State. Like, as long as the guy is efficient on a per target basis, which both McLaurin and Ruggs were, you have to be prepared to abandon the market share criticism when the other people in the rotation are as good as Jalen Waddle, Jerry Jeudy, Devontae Smith are. Just as in Ohio State's case, we should have been like, yeah, well, what the hell is he going to do anyway, more than he did when there's Paris Campbell and Johnny Dixon or whatever, and KJ Hill, I guess.
Yeah, market share is not the way to evaluate.
I think sometimes it's insightful, but you just have to adjust.
Not for these Bama guys.
Yeah, you just have to keep in mind the actual competition in the offense. Like, if it's trash in the offense and the guy's getting 18% target share, like, yeah, that's concerning.
If Rager's was bad, then it'd be a bigger issue.
Right. So, in any case, with Ruggs, it's like, if he had not been so explosive on a per-target basis, then I'd be prepared to say, like, yeah, he's a workout warrior, whatever.
But 13 yards a target this year.
13 yards a target. And like last year, he was over 10 yards a target. His freshman year, he was over 10 yards a target. I'm trying to actually run the reception totals to check his catch percentage, and it looks like it was 66.2. And again, in each case, it was well over 10 yards a target. So that's his 3 years. That's including even his true freshman year. And so that's like right, I guess, about at the baseline of Tua's sort of production. I would need him to be above that baseline to put him in that kind of top tier. But
would you adjust thinking, like, you know, a lot of his routes further down the field type of thing, though?
Oh, they are. A lot of them are. Not all of them are, because you'll see some of his best plays are on slants too. Mm-hmm. Like, he'll just catch it and then I'm ADD.
South Carolina game, the slant in that one.
Yeah, I'm ADD, and I forgot to finish my Ted Ginn thought, but it looked the same in Ted Ginn's tape as to like when he would catch a pass, and he would hit fast forward, and it wasn't just that. It seemed like he would hit fast forward and everyone else would slow down too. Like, it didn't just look like the guy running away from other fast people. It's like, for some reason, everybody else looks slow now, and this guy keeps looking faster and faster as the play goes, and everyone else looks like they're in quicksand. And that happens with Ruggs so many times. He has to run like a 4.28 at worst. Like, it just doesn't make any sense otherwise.
Okay, so we have the speed element down, we have the catch rate down, the impressive per target numbers there. So
I would say only Tyreek Hill is the faster receiver in the NFL next year than whatever Ruggs is.
Okay, so with all of that in mind, where do you expect him to go? What do you think his like ceiling looks like? Do you have a comp or anything like that for him?
I don't really have a comp, but Ben Albright, for what it's worth, is one of the more plugged in NFL reporters. I don't believe he meant to say that he had any information indicating this. It was more like his kind of reasoning personally, I think. But he said he would be very surprised if Ruggs made it past the 15th pick. I know that off the top of my head, a lot of people have mocked him to Denver, which could make sense because he's certainly a sharp contrast to Cortland Sutton, and that kind of speed, excuse me, will create more room for Cortland Sutton to operate where he does in his high volume role. And it's like, then in a role like that, Ruggs could be productive even if he's not making catches specifically. So that makes a lot of sense.
So what would you make of him versus John Ross coming out? Because Ross's insane combine, you know, the 4.22, that vaulted him into being a top 10 pick.
Right, it did. Ross was a much more high volume producer at Washington that one year he didn't get hurt. And like, even before he got hurt at a younger age at Washington, he would get off to fast starts and then he'd get hurt. So it's not like he was not a 1 year wonder or anything. The only thing that he had worse than Ruggs was the durability. But yeah, I don't Also, it's worth recalling, I think, that it was a surprise when John Ross went ninth overall. I think even after the 4-2-2, people were thinking more like 20th or something. Like, I remember being like, oh, man, the Bengals. Like, I remember just I remember not being particularly ready for that. So Ruggs could also go top 10 for all I know, even though we're not really expecting it. I don't know if I expect him to run a 4-2-2 specifically, because okay. Ross, it's useful to look at workout numbers and the 40 that it includes the 40, but the 40 more than any other one is one where if the guy has a track background, or at least if the guy is not track backgrounded, he might suffer uniquely for it. So you can't take away a 4-2-2 from John Ross, but if Ruggs runs like a 4-3-8, I'm still not 100% sold that he's actually slower than Ross, because it's like he might just not know how to do the track form as well. So yeah, you got some guys who run lower than they actually are on the field, on field speed. But yeah, I don't believe in the idea that like if you run a 4-2-2, you might actually be not as fast as the guy who, you know, ran the 4-4. Ross really is that fast. I don't want to say Ruggs can run a 4-2 flat or a 4-2-1, but as long as he runs a 4-2-5, I think I will choose to believe he's even faster on the field than Ross is. He's definitely more of a this could just be because he had it so easy at Alabama. But one thing I will say about Ruggs is he seems to cut loose faster than Ross does. Like, Ross always has been a guy who looks like he's thinking a little bit on the field. Ruggs doesn't seem to, and maybe that's because he doesn't have to. Maybe he'll have to for the first time in the NFL, and he'll all of a sudden look slower. I don't know.
There's the famous anecdote that like the Bama receivers would like literally play rock, paper, scissors for what route they were gonna run, and then just go ahead and do it.
I don't know what to make of that. That's a kind of a weird story. I think Nick Saban might be mad about that.
Well, but probably. My secret all these years.
But yeah, that means that Ruggs, unless they were specifically competing for the chance to just go deep all the time. It's like, I don't know if Judy was actually losing, and that's why he's like, Judy, you got to run the route that's going to get open in a split second, and we'll take these ones that are 40 yards downfield because that's just cooler. I don't know if that's why the workload split the way it did. But yeah, maybe Ruggs is kind of like Michael Bluth, where he just always picks rock or something, and he always got stuck with like the one that we're not going to throw to on this play. I don't know.
Well, yeah, we'll have to do a deeper dive into that. Let's move on to the next tier. Say your piece about Devin Duvernay, and then we will move on.
He was someone that I would have had open. I would have been open to the idea of him being like the top overall receiver, because he had only 1 year of dominant production at Texas, and it was when he was a senior. But I think it was explained not by his age, but because he was moved basically to a different position. Like, they were using him as a kind of more of the Henry Ruggs of the offense, I guess, like running deep. They had Lil Jordan Humphrey playing the slot position that got so many targets.
Sam Ellinger, not great at hitting the deep ball.
Oh, my God. When I watched Texas, I was watching some Colin Johnson tape yesterday because he's the other Texas receiver. He was actually better than I expected him to be. But, man, I hate the Ellinger offense. That guy is just horrible to watch. And I know the numbers aren't even that bad, but it's like infuriating to watch how aesthetically disgusting the Sam Ellinger offense is. But in any case, Duvernay had actually got off to a fast start his true freshman year, and then he kind of just faded into the background for 2 years until last year when they moved him from outside into the slot, and he just killed everyone. Like, he was just murderously good in the slot. I think he was pushing like 80% of his targets were caught this year. 106 of 130 targets caught for 1,386 yards. That's insane production, and he has the kind of speed at 5'11", 200-plus pounds. He has the kind of speed that should register in the mid 4.3 range at the combine. And if you have that kind of speed on that kind of frame, and especially if you have the kind of production that he does, I just don't even really care if you have an uneven skill set or if you don't have like a full dimensioned skill set, because he doesn't, when you're that fast, you don't even need to be that good at receiver stuff, especially when you're at that kind of weight, because being over 200 and being 4.35 or better would just be highly uncommon athleticism. And it would, I think, kind of be a little bit analogous to how Debo Samuel, being 210 plus, having the low 4.5 or whatever he does. I don't even think you need to be that skilled at receiver to like stand out at certain tasks so well, because it's just when you're that fast and you're that dense, it's just hard to defend someone like that. No matter what they're doing, it just kind of sucks because they hit you harder than you hit them and they're faster than you.
Yeah, I mean, like, So there's a lot to unpack there, because I think you like summed it up so well. I think that the hands are really, really strong, and obviously like playing out of the slot helps your catch rate. But, you know, like you said, the 106 catches on 130 targets, by my count, that's only one of three players this past season that had at least 100 catches on 140 or fewer targets. So that's pretty, you know,
81.5% catch rate at 10 plus yards a target. That's something that I'll just say that had only happened this year. Otherwise, in the LSU offense, that was stupid.
Justin Jefferson was one of them, and Michael Pittman from USC would be.
Oh, Michael Pittman even. Okay.
Yeah. So there's that. And then I'm watching this GIF that I put in the Senior Bowl article of him catching a slant over the middle against LSU, and like he could have gotten easily destroyed by two LSU defenders, but braces for contact, gets through it, and then just hits a gear that no one else is gonna like come close to catching him.
See, yeah, he has the density to stand up against whatever bigger corners there might be against him, but playing from the slot, you will more often than on the outside have corners who are small and slow because they have better quickness than these guys who are 6'1", 6'2", and run the 4.3, generally speaking. So that's why you see so many slot corners, so many nickel corners going back however far you want to in NFL history, who are kind of like 5'9", 180, and they only run a 4.6, but they're still pretty good. And it's because they are meant to be able to cover like all three directions. They want to be able to cover the like the curl to the left, the curl to the right, the slant to either direction, the curl in the middle of the field, and sacrificing size and speed for quickness makes sense there. Not if you're running against Devin Duvernay, though. If he's running a 4.35 and he's got 15 pounds on your slot corner, you're just in trouble now, because that guy cannot run with him even a little bit. And that quickness that you sacrifice the speed and the size for is also negated by like how big he is. He can run over this guy. If you put a 5'9", 180 corner on Devin Duvernay so he doesn't kill you with slants all day, he might just take a curl and break the tackle, and then you still have the same problem. No one can catch him now.
Yep. So he's someone that I feel like isn't quite getting the national buzz that he deserves. Like, I would prefer him over Justin Jefferson among slot receivers.
Yeah, I have Duvernay in my third tier, which is the second tier as far as receivers go. I have him in the same tier as T. Higgins, Henry Ruggs, Jalen Reagor, last among them, but in that same tier. And I know for a fact I'm much higher on him than most people. So maybe I'm wrong here, but I think by the time the combine happens, people are going to be like, oh crap, this guy's like got the, you know, top three size adjusted speed going back whatever the entire history of the combine. And now that we look at his tape again, like, he catches the ball pretty well too, and now we can't really think of what reason we have to not like him.
Exactly. So look for him to be a riser come combine time. Let's get into that next tier of receivers. We got Laviska Shenault, we got Brian Edwards, and then Brake, and then Tyler Johnson, KJ Hamler, Quintez Cephas, Justin Jefferson.
Yeah, so Shenault is especially a guy that most people will have ahead of Devin Duvernay, and maybe also even Ruggs, Higgins, and Reagor. Shenault is a guy who would have had much higher, much more hype back in August or something, because he had a down year.
Yeah, if he had the 2018 season this past season, then I think he'd be in that first round conversation. But it's flipped, and when your last or most recent season is pretty distinct drop off of where you were, even if it's not necessarily a big drop off on a per target basis, it's still something that's going to get a knock against you, I think.
Yeah, and he's had injury issues, and I want to say all three of his seasons at Colorado. He missed, or he only played 9 games in 2018. He only played 11 last year. And in the 2018 case, it's a little more understandable, because they were basically they were making him like Jamal Anderson, the wide receiver. Like, they would make him get so many targets, so many carries per game, that it was like, they're violating some sort of labor law at this point by making him work this much.
And that coach got fired.
Yeah, so he caught 86 passes in 9 games, and he also had 17 carries in those 9 games. Last year, he only had 56 catches in 11 games. He was still pretty good on a per-target basis. He was good on a per-target basis, and he still made an impact on the ground. He had 23 carries for 161 yards and 2 touchdowns. Listed at 6'2", 220. If Shenault tests at an above average rate at the combine, I'm prepared to move him way up in the rankings. But in the meantime, I don't think he shows obvious athleticism on tape. He doesn't show obvious like top grade athleticism on tape. And I don't have the workout numbers like we do with Reagor and Devin Duvernay. Duvernay has some kind of track background that's another reason why I'm totally sure pretty much he'll run a 4.4 flat at worst. But in Shenault's case, I at least have not been able to find any numbers reported on him. So if the tape doesn't make you look obviously fast and you don't have like Feldman reporting certain numbers, I'm going to kind of keep an incomplete in that grade, and the combine will fill in whatever the variable will be. But in the meantime, I have to give him an incomplete there, which in the context of his durability troubles keeps him outside of those first couple tiers at receiver for me. But I'm anxious about it. I'm totally willing to move him up depending on what happens at the combine.
I thought, you know, like you said, it's hard to know without the Feldman or like the, you know, that obvious burst on tape. But to me, like, I'm worried that he runs like a high 4.5, like maybe up to a 4.6. And at that point, you know, that's going to be tough.
My nightmare scenario with him is something like a Treadwell kind of case. Cause like, I remember Treadwell catching a ton of passes underneath at Mississippi early on in his career, and then he ran the 4.65 or whatever it was. To be clear, I am not expecting that from Chenault, but it's not like I saw it ahead of time with Treadwell either. So leaving with that ambiguity there, there's simply more ways that something can go wrong when we don't have like confirmed details. So for that reason, I put him in the next tier, but I am anxious about it. And people who are very smart at evaluating prospects that I know of are very high on Chenault, and we'll see. I'm hoping the combine can kind of just settle this for me. But in the meantime, I'm putting him underneath the guys like DuVernay and Ruggs and Rager, who we know can burn, and Higgins, who had multiple years of top shelf production without any durability concerns. You could argue to me, and I wouldn't argue against it, if it's saying like he should be in the same category as Higgins. It's like, yeah, I don't feel strongly against that. But that's, these trivial things are why I'm breaking the tie to Chenault's detriment.
Okay, and then let's move on over to Bryan Edwards.
Little taller than Chenault, not as densely built, not the kind of athlete that guys like Chenault, Higgins, DuVernay, whoever, like Edwards is the first guy in my wide receiver rankings where I'm prepared to just kind of assume he's at most an average athlete. Certainly in terms of speed, he might be surprisingly quick and surprisingly good acceleration for a guy of his build. Cause one thing, when you watch the Bryan Edwards tape, I think you only really see this with Michael Thomas otherwise, but it's like he never looks fast, but guys keep kind of getting twisted around trying to cover him. Like, he gets very clean releases. Maybe he gets better releases against press coverage than anyone in this draft. But it's also one of those things, well, he needs to, if he's going to be running a 4.6 or something. It's like, you need to be as good as Michael Thomas is at running routes if you want to be as productive as Michael Thomas when you're as slow as Michael Thomas. And normally, as a general rule, being that slow is not a good thing, you know, or more specifically, being that slow is normally like the kind of thing that complicates your projection from college to the pros. Like, guys win in the college all the time. That's the whole reason why we even take a look at them in the first place. And yet not many of them overall succeed in the NFL. A lot of the times, if not most of the times, it's because they don't have the physical tools to win the same ways that they did in college, where people were less athletic. And that's a risk with a guy like Edwards if he doesn't test well. But I really think he's polished, and I think you can see like the innate talent just playing wide receiver, and the fact that he got on the field as a true freshman at South Carolina was pretty productive. And also 2 years ago, he had not as many touchdowns as Deebo Samuel, but was basically the same receiving yardage wise as Deebo Samuel. And Deebo Samuel is like 2.5 years older than him, or 2 years older than him, something like that. So if Deebo is as good as he is, and he looks as good as he is, Edwards has to be good at something almost. Like, because what are the odds that they stay at the same baseline in the same offense? You know, they're there at the same time. Edwards at an age disadvantage. I don't know. I feel like he's got to be good. I think he's only a possession receiver, but I think he can be the kind of possession receiver who goes over 100 catches in the NFL if he's in the right offense.
Yeah, great. Definitely has the great hands. I do worry about the overall athleticism there, and you know, it's interesting the way you framed it, where I thought, like, on tape, like you said, the burst off the line didn't look good, but and yet he was always creating that separation. So it's hard to like really conflate it and get the, you know, is it just his route running? Is it something that will catch up to him at the pro level? I mean, it's getting impossible to know.
Yeah, the release is a big part of the NFL puzzle, because basically you never get press coverage, or not much press coverage, in college football, because they run a lot of zone coverages, and the hashes being wide puts the defenses in these weird positions that they're not in the NFL, and they try to cover the resulting open field with zones that don't afford the defense press coverage. And then when you get to the NFL, there's a ton more press coverage. And if you can't get out of that jam like really, really quick and into your route really quick, if you can't present a target as quickly as possible, you might get open in the college terms, but you're still taking 3.5 seconds and the quarterback's either gotten rid of the ball or gotten
not
sacked
looking to, yeah, not looking to your part of the field. I will say, like, it's not that Diggs won every single one of these matchups, but in the Alabama game this year, Trevon Diggs, I mean, there were some times where it looked like Edwards was having trouble with the press coverage. I know that there's some anecdotal evidence to the contrary there. I know that Edwards got the best of him at least a couple times there, but I thought that Diggs did kind of frustrate Edwards in like the press coverage in a way that most other corners didn't.
Yeah, maybe. For whatever it's worth, though, I still feel like in Edwards' tape, he's like more effortless at getting clean releases than pretty much anyone that I've noticed. And that might just be because he's the only one who actually gets press coverage in his tape. But he constantly gets these guys who are supposed to be more athletic than him kind of just chasing ghosts. And he doesn't stay open for long. They catch up with him because they have the recovery speed to catch up. But in the NFL, it's like Thomas, like they would catch up with him too if he was running conventional routes and he had a conventional quarterback. But it's like Breeze always gets rid of the ball in under 2 seconds. So that the fact that he only is open for a half a second never matters, because it's like it's always going there and Breeze always puts it on target. So that's asking a lot. You know, you can't expect Drew Breeze to be available to whichever rookie receiver you're invested in. But if Bryan Edwards ends up in or even like the Rams offense, I feel like he would work well in just something where the quarterback is kind of like quick release oriented, and ideally something where there's another number one or at least some fast receiver on the field to keep the safeties from creeping up too much. Because it's like, yeah, if Edwards is getting double bracketed every single play, I don't really want to have high hopes for him. But if he's the second most feared receiver in an offense with a good quarterback, I think he could lead that team in receptions, probably only averaging like 11 yards a catch or something like that. But I do think in PPR scoring, especially, Bryan Edwards could hold surprisingly high fantasy upside.
Okay. All right, let's move on. We got three more guys for today's episode. We got Tyler Johnson, KJ Hamler. Oh, four more. Quintez Cephas and Justin Jefferson. So let's run through these guys quickly, starting with Johnson.
Yeah, with Johnson, I just don't know what more he could have done to prove himself at Minnesota. He was really productive early on in his Minnesota career, which were his first and second seasons playing receiver at all, because he was a high school quarterback. So playing a new position in an offense that didn't throw the ball that much, Tyler Johnson is one of those cases where the high market share does mean something to me. And they were trash receivers at Minnesota, but it's meaningful because he came through exactly the way you would expect someone much better than his teammates to. Like, he was getting like half almost of the market share stuff in those first 2 years. And then last year, yeah, Rashad Bateman was there and he's really good, but he is probably really good. So that Tyler Johnson didn't have like a 40% market share doesn't matter.
It was still 38.1. So it was really good.
I didn't realize it was that high.
Yeah.
it was still
ridiculous.
A, that's still quite high. And B, he was high volume, high efficiency too. Yep. So it's like, what the hell?
About
else is
10
he
targets
to do?
A game, 11 yards per target.
He might not test that great or something, but the Senior Bowl morons who didn't invite him are just buffoons. Like, there is no way that Tyler Johnson is worse than someone like Chase Claypool or Denzel Mims or whoever they had. I don't think there was a single, I guess Bryan Edwards I have ranked ahead of Tyler Johnson, but that's largely because he was invited to the Senior Bowl and Tyler Johnson wasn't. So I'm prepared for NFL coaches, NFL scouts to kind of like marginalize Tyler Johnson, not take him as seriously as they should. But I think he's shown that he is the real deal and that they are wrong, and he will prove them wrong. Even though they'll marginalize him at the outset. But yeah, if I had an assurance that Tyler Johnson would go in the second round, I would probably actually rank him right behind Chenault and ahead of Edwards, perhaps, even, because he was more productive in college.
Yeah, you know, that last game against Auburn, putting a nice like cherry on top for his college career, just, you know, eviscerated that Auburn defense that was pretty well renowned all season.
I think Tyler Johnson looks to me kind of like a faster Tyler Boyd. Like, Boyd only ran like a 4.6 or something. He still went in the third round. I'm expecting something like that with Tyler Johnson. He goes in the third round,
like,
and a bunch of teams say like, we don't want him, he's too slow or something, and then he gets in training camp as a rookie and the team's like, actually, he's our second best receiver, thank you.
So hopefully he gets that trajectory, because I like Tyler Johnson as well. Let's get on to KJ Hamler, someone who going into this this process, I expected to feel a lot better about than I do right now.
I'm agnostic, but yeah, I have some concerns.
Like, okay, so starting off, like, we knew that he was small coming into this. I mean, 5'9", 176. So he's one of those guys where, you know, he relies on speed because the, you know, the frame isn't all there. So
like if 5'9", 175 or something.
5'9", 176. So yeah. If he, you know, adds a bunch of weight to like kind of just be able to stay on the field at the NFL level, does he lose that speed variable and does that end up, you know, sapping his overall effectiveness? And I thought that I would see a lot more exciting stuff on tape than I really did from him. He kind of like is slower off the line than he should be for a guy his size and a guy as renowned for his quicks as he is. So there are just some odd things about his tape that I'm going to continue to look a little bit deeper into this. I think the one that I've mainly watched from this past year in terms of the game breakdown was the Minnesota game. So we'll have to see what else I see from that. But the fact that he didn't crush them in that game, it's a bit of a red flag, or at least a starting point of a little bit of skepticism that, you know, especially with some other things thrown in.
Yeah, and some of it might be not his fault. Like the quarterbacks, even Trace McSorley, the Penn State quarterbacks aren't exactly like killer downfield passers. So I don't know if he had gotten open often downfield, if it would have mattered that much. But the tape that I looked at, he was pretty much reduced to being like an after the catch guy who catches a slant and then he's too fast for everybody to catch. And there's something there. Like that's sure, something to work with when you have that kind of speed and when you produce the way he did on a per target basis. But we just don't have evidence of him like beating presses at the line of scrimmage or like losing guys on sophisticated routes down the field. He might be capable of all of that, but we don't know that he is. And some of these other guys have demonstrated more as far as that goes. And you know, a guy like DuVernay, he's probably the same speed as KJ Hamler. KJ Hamler is still a burner, but that 25 pounds matters. And it, being the 4.3 guy at 200 is a lot more valuable than being the 4.3 guy at 178 or something like that. Not to call Andy Isabella a bust, because I don't think he is one, but it's a really thin line between like an Andy Isabella and a T.Y. Hilton. And the T.Y. Hilton possibility is still there for Hamler. It's just that the bad case scenario is also totally possible. And I think more possible than the bad case scenarios of basically everybody that we've named so far.
Yeah, no, that's a really good way of framing it. Let's get on to Quintez Cephas. I just haven't done the work yet, I think, on him to confidently agree or disagree with you one way or the other. I think that I've fallen into the Wisconsin, he's a Wisconsin receiver type of labeling of him, but
I don't know how he'll test. And the thing with him is it's going to be the character question, and I don't know if he'll be invited to the combine for the thing that he was accused of and acquitted of. The thing that he was accused of,
bad
as alleged, very spurious evidence that anything particularly happened. It's bad as described, certainly, but again, he was acquitted. He's insisted his innocence all along. He stayed in Wisconsin the whole year that he was suspended from the team and litigating this thing. Came back to the team after not training with them up until like 2 weeks before the season, was immediately their wide receiver one upon returning. And this is what it comes down to for me for Cephas, is like, I don't know what kind of way he's going to test at the combine. I think we have reason to believe it'll be no worse than average, but probably not much more than average. But he'll probably be like 6'205", 6'210", something like that. That's good density. That's good. That's good for projecting against the press in the NFL. And then I'm kind of just deferring to his production after that, because at Wisconsin in the 2017, which was his true sophomore season, and then 2019, his true senior one, redshirt junior, I guess, but because he had that 1 year.
Chronologically, it would have been a senior
year. Yeah, age-wise, it's his fourth. 2017 and 2019, between the two of them, Wisconsin completed two-thirds precisely of their passes at 8.1 yards per pass. Cephas led both of those teams in receiving production, and I think in the 2017 case, he might have been at an age disadvantage from a couple of the next leading receivers. I can't remember. But 66.6% completed at 8.1 yards per pass for Wisconsin over 2017 and 2019. Cephas led them in volume by an emphatic distance, and he caught 66.9% of those targets to him at 10.5 yards per target. So he exceeded the completion percentage of that team, and he exceeded the yards per pass by 2.4 yards per attempt.
That's impressive.
While also leading them in volume in an emphatic way. So that's one of those things where, like, I don't even really ask myself the question anymore of like, how athletic do I think he is? It's like, he's talented at playing receiver. That's the only way you can produce like that.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's a really good way of framing it. So we'll have to see. And again, I think you bring up the good point that there's no buzz that he's going to be like this insane athlete at the combine. If he just like, you know, doesn't tank it, I think that there's enough probably on his film and in that production profile for a team to, you know, talk themselves into him as probably like a fourth rounder, third round.
If they're not concerned about his character, I think the second round is totally in play.
Okay.
I don't think he'll embarrass himself with the athletic testing. And in fact, I kind of have to be optimistic because I don't know how that's a big margin with which to outplay your team's baseline as the leading volume guy to both carry the offense and make the rest of your offense look bad doing it on an efficiency basis. Normally you have you lose the efficiency with the volume, and he just seemed to get better with it.
Okay. All right. So that's, all right, I'm going to have to take a second look here at him for sure. And then let's round things out with LSU's Justin Jefferson.
Yeah, I'm agnostic on him, but when I turned on the tape, I just didn't see anything stand out. He played a lot of slot for LSU. He caught the passes that went his way. He was super, super efficient, and you know, he's not going to drop the ball. And if you know, playing in the slot, he might work there in the NFL too, because it's generally easier to be a good slot receiver than it is a standout outside receiver. But the guy, was he a walk-on or just like a...
He was like a two-star. Like,
okay, yeah, so he looks as unathletic as you would expect someone with that recruiting background, and then he's also skinny. So he's like listed under 190 at 6'3". If you're as skinny as Robbie Anderson at 6'3", you know, 180, 190 or whatever, you need to be Robbie Anderson fast to make up for it. And when you watch Justin Jefferson, I would sooner bet he runs a 4.6 than a 4.5. Not to condemn him to a 4.6. He could be better than that. It's just, if I had to choose between the two, I'd say 4.6, and he's also skinny. So all he has going for him is his production, which is great. It's great production, but he looks like a fourth round pick to me.
Yeah, I think he'll be fine if he gets on the field in the NFL, but like I don't think there's anyone needs to like pound the table for him. And I know it's hard to look at this past year's production where he catches 102 out of 122 targets for like 1400 yards and say like this guy is anything less than a starting receiver, but you got to look a little bit deeper at it. And I'm not overly impressed.
Yeah, he showed hands and that's it. He could maybe do more, but he never was asked to, so we don't know. I'm already regretting ranking him ahead of Antonio Gandy-Golden and Isaiah Hodgins and maybe even Gabriel Davis.
Yeah, so I saw that you bumped up Gabriel Davis.
Yeah, that's he's in the tier after this. We'll have to get to him in another episode. But yeah, I'm already like I ranked Justin Jefferson 19th in my top 60 that I posted yesterday, and I'm already like I already feel like a coward. I'm like these are the things that contribute to my insomnia, is spending a lot of time thinking like, ah, why did I rank Justin Jefferson 19th? He should have been 26th. So that's why I'm in a bad mood.
But we love you for that kind of neuroticism, dude. So keep it up.
I don't recommend it as anyone's doctor. I don't think you should try it. It's bad.
But yes, you can catch all of Mario's rankings up on the website. That's the lead one, I think, it's up there on the front page for the NFL section.
It's in the Dynasty Watch subgroup articles.
Yes.
Which is where you should go for all your Dynasty whatever stuff.
Absolutely. Yep. And that's in the top 60. Jerry Donabedian just had his first entry into that today, talking about the early risers and fallers. And then if you want to get a head start on guys that we'll be talking about from a Dynasty perspective in a couple of years from now, I just posted like 4,000 words on the signing day.
Oh, my God. That's a lot of words.
It was too many. Admittedly, for kids that haven't played a single down of college football yet, but that's up on the college football section. I broke down some guys that are going to be impact freshmen. I got to bash on the schools that had terrible recruiting classes. I really went in on USC for a while, went in on Kevin Sumlin, also went in on Justin Fuente of Virginia Tech, and gave some props to some schools that outperformed my expectations. Georgia Tech looks like they actually have something to look forward to potentially with Jeff Collins. So
maybe.
So keep an eye.
They have a real, as Mecole said,
they just got a real offense.
Yeah, he just got a real offense like a year ago. Give it time.
Give it time, folks. But this kid, Jahmyr Gibbs, even Florida tried to get him and they couldn't. So I think he's going to be really good. Last year, we called guys like Sam Howell and Breece Hall and George Pickens from that article. So hopefully we can hit on some of those and have a little bit less John Emery's. But anyway, that's going to wrap things up for this week's edition of the RotoWire NFL podcast. We'll be back again next week talking a little bit more receivers. Stay tuned.
Has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.